Well, everybody, welcome back to the Trick Podcast of Joy and Gozo TV on this lovely Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. Welcome back to my channel. Welcome back to this video talking about my experience and the collective Hispanic Latino experience with racism is different than the rest. Now, what I want to do in this podcast is to describe my own story and experiences with racism, as well as what I've noticed among the Latino community, the Hispanic community, and the stories that I have heard for 30 plus years of how they experience racism here in the U.S. I'm also not in any way minimizing, maximizing, or even separating the Latino experience in the U.S. from the African-American experience, Jewish, Asian, white experience. If anything, I want to document what we as people of color have experienced, what I personally have experienced, and the experience, to document the experience of those that I have served with. So let me first start by saying that a lot of my experience with racism has been in the white evangelical church. It has also been in just typical churches, regardless of race or color. My context for 30 plus years, I was first a pastor when I was a young 23-year-old, if you can believe that. Full-time pastor at 23. So it's been 30 years or so, not quite, but almost 30 years of experiences that, for many reasons, remain unspoken of, buried, etc. I guess I also want to say this is no bandwagon for me, bandwagoning. This is something that I've been talking about mostly, I guess, to myself and to my perhaps journals and somewhat to my family over 30 years. But it has become more clear, and maybe my boldness, my confidence has grown the older I get. I also want to say that this is not an easy topic for me to discuss, mostly out of fear, not out of guilt. I am completely confident in the importance of the story, of course, of my own story, of the story of my people. But because it's almost like the black man who's afraid to being stopped by a cop, there's a trauma there. Because I have lived under this reality for 30 years, really 40 years, since I was a young boy here in the U.S., I moved to Long Beach when I was 8 years old, so 40 plus years. There is a fear associated with talking about things because you worry, whether real or not, or traumatic or not, trauma or not, that someone, the white man in this case, is going to come and get you. And yet, the story happened, the stories have happened, continue to happen, and will remain unless we change things until the wealth, which is what I will mostly talk about, is in the hands of the black and brown men and women who have worked for it and who deserve their own land, their own wealth, their own, peace and safety, and live in harmony with everyone else. So, about, I don't know, a few years ago, you know, I'm not really good with dates and such. Gozo, no kidding. Someone that I really knew really well passed away, and I didn't go to the funeral because of the racist experiences that I experienced from this person as well as the people that he represents. And it was something that didn't shock me per se that I felt that way, because I knew that, I've known that for many years, but it was maybe a semi-bold statement that I made. I don't know if anybody even noticed or cared. I wasn't doing it to make a statement, but in my little head, in my head, I thought, okay, this is a statement that I'm making, if anything, to myself about what happened. I also want to say before I keep going that I'm not going to mention names or mention numbers or people. It doesn't matter. What matters is that these things happen. So it's important to document these things for the passing on of the story to my kids, to young Latino, and especially in my case, young men and women of color, of dark skin, which is my narrative, and I consider it a gift and a joy, that would see me as a dark man, as a black man, you could say, because I have black blood in my DNA from my father and from slavery in the islands and the Atlantic coast, as we call it, in Central America. And I proudly speak of that. To me, that's not any sort of put down or anything to hide. I'm proud of my darkness, of my background, of my mestizo darkness-es, my black mestizo-ness. And so I want to document this for the generosity of it all, because in spite of all these things, I continue and I have given my life to Jesus and to the serving of everyone, white, black, every color, because that's what Jesus commands me to do. And yet the story has to be told for the sake of humanity, because the less that we hide our stories, the less human we become, the more invisible we become, the less present we become, the more we lose touch with our heart, with our values, with what we love, with our own faith. I heard an interview recently with, I forget her name, but a very articulate woman of color. I think she's half Afghan, half Pakistani, and grew up in Norway. Maybe you know the story, you know this person. Very articulate, poet, director of movies. And she was talking about that the reason why, I guess she went in and interviewed someone, and I think it was someone that she interviewed who said to her that the reason we talk about culture and race is because we then can gain back our own humanity. That we can gain back our own humanity. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I'm speaking, and I have been speaking about this for a few years now, because I feel human when I do that. It brings tears to my eyes. It touches that deep part of my, not hate. I'm not going to lie that there is no anger, but not hate, but definitely anger, frustration, righteous anger. At the same time, love and compassion. And I would say that's mostly what I feel because of my faith and because of just simply evolving and growing as a man. I have no hate, but I do have protest, I do have frustrations, I do have pain, and like a scar in an arm, or like the tattoos on my arm. Every tattoo, every scar has a story that is important to tell, because at some point someone will ask you, hey, what happened there on your arm? Why do you have that scar? And so we have to talk about our stories, because they bring healing, they bring love, they bring peace, they bring story telling to our kids, to young people, to young little boys and girls that are black like me, dark like me, that will be inspired by my story. At least that's the hope. And so I would say that for the Latino person, what I've noticed is that we're not afraid of cops. We're afraid of being ripped off financially. And I don't even want to call it scared or afraid. We're not afraid. We are a very strong and valiant people, but we are, the way we experience racism is through the stealing of our wages, of our tips and wages, of our pay, of the money that we have not earned because of racism. Without a doubt, I would say the majority of the kind of racist experiences that we've, the racist, yeah, experiences that we've had have been mostly in two areas: 90% wealth and the lack of wealth distribution and fairness and justice. I'm talking about having people steal money from us, not paying us what we deserve because of our color, because of our accent, because of our legal status, because of where we live, just because of prejudice and racism. And second, the injustice of the immigration laws. Now, someone can say, well, look at you. You have a house. You have clothes. You have legal status. That's because I've worked hard and because I have busted my butt to work for everything I have. And yet, and I would say I've done this in spite of the horrible prejudice and racism that I've experienced, and the injustices, both in the immigration system as well as in the wealth and financial systems, in my case, primarily within the church. And so to the person who says, well, I did it, you did it, yes, but my story, my scars have to be talked about because they give a warning to other young people to what to look out for. And more than anything, it is my heart to say, just like Jesus hung on a cross and yet forgave his enemies, forgave those who were crucifying him, in the same way, we as people of faith, people of color, I myself, my intent is to forgive, to show compassion, and to be a generous man to anyone and to everyone, regardless, in spite of the thorns on my head, metaphorically speaking, not comparing myself to the Savior. I'm not here to forgive sin. My point is just the pain, the human experience, that in spite of that, we as a Latino culture, we are some of the most generous people that you will ever meet. Now, speaking of generosity, I've been talking to a friend about generosity, and this is something that really, to me, is so generative and very, just touches my heart. We're talking about a podcast that we're working on about the generosity of the Latino culture, especially when it comes to helping families back home through, I think they're called remittances. Is that what they're called? Let me see here. Yeah, remittances. That's right. I know that word. I just was a little confused there. But, you know, la vida generosa, the generous life of the Latino family, is so beautiful. Especially those who live here in the U.S. and we send money back to our families. Because without those funds, our families back home could not survive. I think I read a statistic. I think it was during his presidency 4 years ago. I was reading a lot about this because a lot of his rhetoric was against immigrants, both legal and undocumented. And so I think that the statistic I read, I could be wrong, is that 30% of, I think, Central American economy comes from remittances. Now, remittance, I didn't know what this was either. It's when, let's say for me, and this is true of me and many families like me, let's say you make $1,000 a month. You give $200 to your church and you give $200 to your family back home. We're talking about your parents, your kids, your sisters, your abuelitas, your abuelitos, your parents, your tíos. And we're no NBA players, okay? We're not talking about us being millionaires and helping our mom to buy a first house. We're talking about survival. This is true of me. This is true of thousands and millions of Latinos who live in the U.S. who, by the grace of God and our hard work, in spite of the racism, the prejudice, and yes, the opportunities given to us here in this blessed U.S. of A. that we love with our whole heart, we continue to be generous people no matter what. And that's really a beautiful story. That, and this is not just Latino culture, by the way. This is African culture. This is island culture. This is Asian culture. This is white culture. This is something that it means to be human. We are generous people because we have the image of God. But speaking of, again, the economics and the racism of among the Latino culture, this is part of the joy and the compassion and the generosity of brown and black people, people of color. And let me just say once again that I'm here to represent all colors, but specifically the black experience, the dark, maybe, skin experience, no matter who you are. It could be a Filipino, Vietnamese person, Cambodian people whose skin is very much like mine, dark, and therefore they are looked down upon by lighter-skinned Asians and the rest. Now, the reason why remittances are important is because of the economics. So, my grandmother cleaned homes her whole life, three homes, taking three buses at 50, 60, 70 years of age to put me through school, my cousins, my nieces, my uncles, you name it, her own brothers and sisters, in a one-bedroom apartment in the, quote, bad part of town in Long Beach, California. My beautiful abuelita, that's what I learned from her sacrifice. And yet, My mom was telling me a story that she went to help my, actually it wasn't my grandma, to help a friend of my mom's to clean homes. Same thing, just to kind of help and make a living here. And this lady that my mom was helping, no, the man, the owner of the house, came around my mom. Nothing weird happened. This is more just racial stuff. And he ran his finger across a table, and there was some dust on there. And he put his finger right up to my mom's eyes, kind of like cross-eyed kind of thing, you know how like that happens, and said, "You better clean this." And then my mom, infuriated, if you don't know my mom, she is a righteous woman of God. She went to the lady she was working with, and she said, "First of all, this is not my job. This is your job. And second, please tell that man to never, ever treat me like that again." And that is a simple, simple, almost like innocent example of the kind of hate and prejudice that has happened to many, in this case, women that work in the hotel industry. I mean, God, goodness, I could have millions of tape of stories if we were to talk about the racism that happens in those situations, in hotels, in restaurants, in homes, with the seniors, on the road, in a car. That's not even including all of the racist and prejudiced immigration rhetoric that has come from the president and, unfortunately, many people of faith as well. Personally, yeah, it's been mostly a financial prejudice that I had to work twice or 10 times as hard to deserve what this other guy is getting paid, even though I had the same education and my influence upon that particular church was 10 times the influence of anyone else of the same age and different and the same education levels, the same experience, you name it. And yet, because I didn't speak up about it, mostly out of fear, and finally when I did, I was yelled at down the hall by the person in charge saying, "You better work harder if you want to make more money around here." And that was just 100% racist. And then I remember at the end, I was called a lightning rod, as if what I was protesting was not my right. And this is typical. You know, this is why unions and people protest outside of hotels when, you know, again, people of color, when the hotels want to pay the employees less to do the same work or to do more work. I mean, this is just common. But again, the Latino experience with racism, it revolves primarily around money and wealth and the injustice of wealth distribution. Another example is you have maybe a secretary who, because of her accent or because maybe she wasn't a part of the culture for the last 50 years, she gets paid half what the previous person got paid who did the same work. And yet this new secretary, because as immigrants we are used to having to work 10 times as much, we produce that particular organization twice the results, three times the results financially. And yet we are paid less, unless someone, hopefully of color, hopefully in power, hopefully with a voice, will speak up on that secretary's behalf and say, "This is unfair. We need to pay her twice what she is getting paid right now." Same goes for anyone in power, anyone secretary or anyone assistant manager at a store, at a restaurant, or at a church. Again, in my context, mostly this has been in churches. "Oh, but come on, Trig. I mean, you seem to be okay, and your wife this and your wife that." It's because we work for it. We have worked for it. We have earned our keep. You as a white person are not giving me anything for free. If anything, again, as people of color, we have been trained and we have been almost forced or I don't know what the word is. We have been socialized to work 10 times as hard as anyone else because of the concern of being fired. And that firing then means that our kids have no food, our children have no clothes. Now we have to take 4 buses, not 3. Now we have to go and endure racism from another person. And therefore we remain in this job where there is injustice and where there is prejudice because of fear of not being able to feed our children. Because now that this particular setup is gone, now what am I going to do with that 5-year-old or that 8-year-old, and who's going to take care of them now that my schedule is totally upside down? Because now I have to work from 5 a.m. till 5 p.m., not from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And so now who's going to take care of my kids? And my mom, who was doing it, she's now sick, or she needs help now, or she tore up her knee, or she has diabetes, or she has high blood pressure. My point is, we don't have the safety net. We have conditioned. That's not the word I was looking for. We have been conditioned to stay silent and to stay down, not under the boot or the knee of a police officer in Minnesota, but under the boot that's cutting off our financial oxygen to our brain. Hear me on this. The boot that is on our neck is the boot of the injustice of the boss, of the slave master, putting a boot of financial injustice, cutting off the oxygen on our neck to our brain, which is our families, our children, and our homes. That is the great injustice of the Latino, of the woman who works at the hotel, at the restaurant, or the man who works construction, or who drives a truck. In my case, of the brown man in a white church for 30 years, who is the only pastor of color, and therefore experiences unspoken amount of prejudice, racism. Forget the comments and the looks. I'm talking about financial losses and a lack of a seat at the table of power because of color, not because of performance. In fact, again, I repeat myself, our performance is usually twice, 5 times, and tenfold that of our fellow colleagues. Now, the injustices haven't stopped us from being generous people, from loving the very people that hurt us. Because as people of faith, here's a couple of reasons why. One is because of our Catholic background. No matter what, let's say in the liberal community or evangelical community in the U.S., people think of Catholics, we grew up with a Catholic tradition in most of Mexico, Central and South America. Coming from, you know, the Crusades and the Latin and the European Spanish Inquisitions and all the rest. And so even though that was colonialism and patriarchy and all the horrible things, it left us something amazing, which was faith in Jesus Christ. And because of that, we are people who love, have learned to love. Second, because of, I would say because of our music. And because of just our personality, we as people, Latino people, we love music. And so we have found ways to process our pain through music and dance. That's why Latinos, we love Latin music and we love parties and we love to be together. I think a third thing that has helped us is family. There is such a love that we have received, sacrificial love from our grandmas, abuelitas, and abuelitos, from our moms and dads, that we can't help but love other people, even if they've pained us. And maybe lastly, it's because of our immigrant story. Any immigrant, no matter who you are, whether you're from Germany or from Mexico, you have learned how to be generous because we know that we are strangers in this land. And so our hearts go out to give back. We're not the type who want to steal and destroy and just take. Even though that's how we're often painted, whether it's the looting that we see on TV or whether it's, quote, you're stealing from the white man because you're not paying taxes and you're taking milk for your kids and you have all these, what do they call these, carrier children who come here to be citizens, and you're, you know, this attitude or this belief that we're here to steal, it's so not true. Latinos by nature, and again, most people of color, we are here as thankful people because we know we're in a foreign land that, if you want to really be honest, used to belong to Latin America, right, into Mexico, into Native Americans or indigenous people. And so you're talking about, in spite of all that, I mean, just think of your friends that are Latinos. We're some of the most generous, family-oriented, kind, loving people, accepting of all colors. We don't have prejudice against the white, the black, the other Hispanics, the Asians. Now, we have many imperfections, including some prejudice. I'm not going to say it's 100% true. But because of our immigrant experience, out of thankfulness, because of our religious background, because of the love of our moms, and because of our music and culture, we are imperfect and yet very generous people who are here to build this beautiful country. Because, and maybe a fourth thing, is because of the violence in our own countries. We see a good thing when we, you know, we know a good thing when we see it. And we know that the U.S. really has blessed us. And that's why we are shocked why it doesn't love us back. Why does it hate us so much when we have done nothing but love this place, to work and to kick our butts to make this place the country that it is, the best place on earth? Because we know the violence back home. I come from war. I've told you my story. At 50, how could I not give my kids and anyone at my church, on the street, my neighbors, everything? And yet, how many times have I not been kicked in the mouth? Someone looking at me as if, why are you here in this whiter neighborhood? Why are you here in this whiter school, in this white church? Who put you here? And how long are you going to be here? When can we ship you back out? I literally had someone, the last 5 years, a white man in power, tell me, why and when are we going to ship you out of here? I mean, talk about slavery metaphors and just prejudice and hate. And I mean, forget that I'm a spiritual leader and that this person was supposed to be a spiritual leader as well. Just the vulgarity of that statement. And that's normal, you know, and yet we continue as people of color to give and to, but we have to also resist. You know, as we say in the Latino culture, we have to be mansos, not mensos. We have to be kind, not stupid. And I feel that because of fear of being thrown onto the street and being, quote, shipped out back home, many Latinos, men and women, we remain silent. But our silence is only hurting our own humanity. Because if you are just here to hug me or to thank me for the taco that you liked or for that I cleaned your home, that is nothing to us. That is you just being an employer. That's me working at in a factory for Amazon or in a factory in China. It's the least that you could do is to be human and to pay me what I deserve, which doesn't happen here in the U.S. What really we all want as humans is true acceptance. And as I preached on Sunday, to be a friend, not a slave. And in that context, or the word phileo, or in the Aramaic, the word friend means that we are joined at the hip, that we were born from the same mother in the same womb. That's what Jesus commands us to do. When he says love one another, and he calls us now friends, not slaves, it means that it's a love that goes deeper than words. It's a love that gives power to the man of color, that gives power and wealth to the woman that's an indigenous woman, or to an Asian, or to a black or Latino woman. That's what true love is. Anything else is not love. Anything else is just words or convenience. Or as long as I have the power, I'll give you the leftovers. That's not love. Especially as people of faith, which that's our standard, is Jesus. His own words. You can read that in John 15, by the way. So to me, as I've said the last few weeks, don't apologize, don't give me hugs, don't ignore my story. Instead, give me the same access to the power and the wealth that I deserve. Not for me, but for the people that I represent and love. My immigrants, my seniors, my children, people of color, people from all the nations, white seniors, black seniors, the single mom who works 3-4 jobs, the abuelitas, the African woman who has to bury her son and who doesn't have the means to bury her son and has to have a party to hopefully raise enough money to bury her son back home in Africa. For that small business owner who wants to open a food truck business so that his daughter can go to school and yet have to have her work 3 jobs just to be able to live, hopefully, on campus, or maybe at an apartment with 3 of her friends or her sisters. And yet, enduring the racist attitudes, and this happened to someone at one of my churches, who was at a stop sign, the lady behind her was honking, the young girl in the car, Latina girl, white woman in her 60s in the back, honk, the young girl was on the phone, the lady behind her got mad, wanted to pull her out of the car, the young Latina woman, girl, took off, and the white woman behind her sued her, and because this young girl had no documentation, she had to pay $5,000 to a crook lawyer to, quote, get her off the hook. Because someone behind her pulled her hair and wanted to drag her out of the car. And this girl that was panicking and afraid for her life, as well as knowing her legal status, took off, and yet things got even worse. Imagine if this lady had even gotten a scratch on her arm. This young girl would be in jail as we speak. And yet, because of her friends and family coming around her, they paid for her attorney, they paid for her legal fees, they supported her even though she lost time from work, they helped her to get mental health aid because of the trauma that this cost this young girl. And she was able to get back on her feet. Now, this happens every day. This is not a Latino, brown, black. This is just the injustices of the day, but it's magnified to the Latino community because of these two things, the financial injustices and the immigrant injustices that we face daily. Yes, we're not afraid of a cop because of our color. I mean, although I am because I'm a dark skin, but a lot of Latinos, they're lighter or they're mixed, you know, they're brown. It's easy to spot a, quote, Mexican, right? Or a Salvadorian, but when you see a man of color, in my case, I have almost like twice the fear. But what we face in general are the immigration prejudices, immigrant racist, mostly the law. I'm talking about the laws. And second, the financial injustices that we have faced working, in my case, mostly in the white evangelical church, and for many of my friends and family and colleagues working in the hospitals, in the homes, in the hotels, in the restaurants, on the construction site, on a truck. Now, is everyone facing this? No. Is every Latino facing some sort of resistance or prejudice? No. I'm talking about my story and those that I represent and I love, including white, black, African American, African island, Asian, you name it. And this is important because at the end of the day, in spite of those things, we continue to love our neighbors as ourselves because Jesus, not Malcolm X or Cesar Chavez, is my hero. I don't know, Oprah or whoever the heroes are today, which are great. It's great to have these men and women speak up about these topics. It informs us and it gives me words and language, MLK, of course. I've been to the place where he was shot in Memphis. But at the end of the day, my hero is Jesus, and his example is the one I follow. On a cross, saying, forgive them, for they do not know. And yet, his followers documented his story. And he rose, and 50 days after that, on Pentecost Sunday, Peter went and spoke prophetically to power. And where did he start? The man you killed. And that's what we're talking about here. The man you killed, the hopes you killed, the dreams you killed, the money you stole, the immigrant laws that you turned against us. We have to start with the pain so that we can move to promise. We can move to peace. What do I want? I said it already. I want financial and I want political peace and freedom and rights. Not for me, but for the people that I love and represent. And then second, I want an immigrant system that is fair to people of color. And then maybe at the end of the day, what I want is what we all want, and that's love. We want to lock arms, as MLK said, with my brothers and sisters across the aisle of color and race and experience, and realize that behind our color, there is a common experience of love, of pain, of suffering. I love my German brothers. My wife is from Irish and Dutch descent. I love who she is and her family, and she loves me, but we love each other with eyes wide open of who we are in our experiences and our loves. And it, as I said at the beginning, it humanizes who she is. It humanizes me, not just as a pastor or as a nice guy, but as a black, dark man in the U.S., in the church, mostly in the white church. And yet I am thankful because of Jesus. I stand against prejudice. I stand against racism. I stand against unfair immigrant laws and labor laws and financial laws that harm the immigrant and that harm the people of color. But I am for Jesus, and I am for unity and for love. That is my prayer, is love. That is my commandment from Jesus, is love one another. Not as a slave loves a master. That's not love. That's business. But as a slave loves a friend, meaning his equal. And that's what Jesus calls us. And that's how we will be known. That's our testimony to the world. And the white church has a long way to go. The black church has a long way to go. We all have a long way to go in this topic of prejudice, racism, politics, financial injustice, immigrant injustice. But we're on our way. And 2020, my God, what a year to open our eyes. I remember in December, I was praying. Well, let me go back 3 years ago, and the Lord gave me a vision. I believe in those things because they happened to me. I was driving up the mountains to pray, and on the way up the mountain, I didn't even have to go in there and pray. God said, 3 years you will suffer, and then the fourth year you will begin the years of plenty. And he then gave me a specific date. He said January 2020 will begin the years of plenty. And so in prayer, in December of 2019, November, God said, name next year, open the eyes of my heart, Lord. No idea. He told me to call 2017 and 18, 19, we will not be shaken. And so I did. We have t-shirts and the whole thing. And then 2020, God said, call it, open the eyes of my heart. Obviously 2020, and you know, there was a lot of just practical things, but God said, call it. So I did. So our current quote teaching series is called Open the Eyes of My Heart. And this is, I'm convinced, pandemic and racist stuff included, that this is the first year of plenty for us, for you and for me. It's not just for my church or for me. It's for anyone who has eyes to see and ears to hear what the Spirit of God is doing. Do not close your eyes. Do not hide do not hide from this. Do not turn a blind eye or a deaf ear to these things that the Spirit of God is saying. If what I'm saying is of the Spirit, listen to it. Now, what action steps do I recommend? Vote in November. Not just for the president that you believe will hold these values, but for city council, local government, whoever is up for re-election in November or whenever that may be this year. Think about climate change. Think about immigration. Think about prejudice and racism. Think about love and unity. Look and vote for those men and women who are speaking not to you, not for what you want, but for love, unity, peace, harmony, forgiveness. That's who we need to be electing at every level, at the school level, your churches, your local government, etc. Anywhere where you have a voice. Number two is pray. Pray at all times. Unite with people and pray. And then third is tell your story. Maybe you don't have a podcast. You can come on my podcast anytime. Just drop me an email. But you don't need me. You have a phone. Just go live on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. It's easy as ever. And start talking about your story. And put it, wrap it in a context of love. But tell your unique story. And if you're wondering why, who cares? Your kids care. Those kids on the streets, those Gen Ys and those Gen Zs that I'm so proud of, those 30-year-olds to 18-year-olds to 14-year-olds, they care. And they need the ammunition in a positive way. They need the education and the inspiration from your story as their grandma, as their mom, as their father, to continue and not give up. Let's continue this conversation. Let me know if you would like to get on the podcast and talk more about these things. I'm sober about these things, but I am also thankful that God has brought all of these crazy things to a head here in 2020 to bring us to the beginning of the blessing that He has in store for us. He has a wonderful plan for your life. I believe it. I declare it in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like, comment, subscribe, share this broadcast with 10 of your friends. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The David Trigg Show. Find the complete archive at davidtrigg.com or subscribe for free through the podcast app on iTunes or Stitcher on Android.
Each week, we bring you a message of joy, success, and personal power in spite of fear, anxiety, and depression. Because as we like to say, though there's pain in the night, gozo comes in the morning.